evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 8, 2021. Two aid workers were killed in Lake State.
The ministry has learned with great sorrow the killing of our two healthcare providers.
And some internally displaced persons sheltering at UN camps say it's not safe to go home.
I know that you are suffering in the POC, but the suffering is not for you alone. The suffering is for all South Sudanese, even those who are outside the POC. For how long are you going to stay in these camps?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in South Sudan say unidentified gunmen killed two aid workers working with the non-governmental organization Doctors with Africa in the Lake State's Ural West County on Monday. The police spokesperson in Lake State says two other volunteer aid workers were also wounded during the attack. For VOA News, William Sandemabor reports from Rumbek.
In a statement issued today, Matthew Hillingworth, the United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, said two aid workers working for Doctors with Africa Kwam were killed when their vehicle was ambushed in Yerul West County on Monday. Hillingworth said the aid workers were traveling in a clearly marked humanitarian vehicle, which was a part of convoy returning from a health facility. He says initial reports indicate the attackers emerged from the bush and opened fire on the convoy. Hillingworth condemned the killing of the two aid workers and called on South Sudanese local leaders and communities to protect humanitarian personnel as they deliver assistance to the people across the country. He urged the government to strengthen law enforcement, investigate attacks on aid workers, and bring the culprits to justice. Lagos State Health Minister Dr. Jacob Akwesh-Pirachwoth confirmed yesterday's attack on Kwam's workers.
The ministry has learned with great sorrow the killing of our two healthcare providers. In person, Moses Bakir is a nutrition manager working with Kwam, Doctor with Africa, and a driver, Mr. Abraham Gulengwerwer, who were murdered yesterday at 5 p.m. It was 5 p.m.
The health minister calls the killings a violation of rights of health workers and said he will work with the minister of local government to investigate the killings. Lagos State Police spokesperson Captain Elijah Mabormakwach confirms the two workers, a nutrition program manager and a driver, were traveling from Yerul West County of Mapodit Payam to their field office in Yerul Town when an unidentified gunman ambushed them. Captain Makwai says the attack took place between Mapodit Hospital and Agaim Village of Yerul West County.
We have registered a case of humanitarian vehicles that were fall in an attack at the area of Yerul West County. Yesterday at 5, vehicles of Kwam organization traveled from Yerul Town to Mapodit in distributing medicines in to PHCC. After he delivered the medicines, the car fall in an attack in ambush of criminals believed to be from Agar community and was attacked, leading to the killing of the doctor who is the manager for nutrition project in Yerul West. Also, the driver was killed, plus other two students. A girl of 17 years old were also shot wounded.
Makwai says the two injured students who worked as volunteer aid workers are being treated at Mapodit Primary Health Care Center. He wonders why people attacked aid workers.
These people are coming here to save us. And if we turn against them to kill them, then we are going to lose the help, because everybody will escape and fall out from the state here. So I'm strongly condemning this kind of attack.
Makwach appealed to the community to cooperate with the police as they try to apprehend the killers.
The community has a role also to play in combating the criminals. So therefore, I'm appealing to them, to whoever may have an information about anything wrong, something, immediately let him report to the police and must be apprehended, such that we maintain our security in the state. Nobody will come from nowhere to come and maintain for us the security.
On May 13 of this year, an 8 worker was shot and killed in Eastern Equatorial State. On May 23rd, a doctor with International Rescue Committee was killed in Unity State. 4 8 workers have been killed in South Sudan in the last month alone, according to Healingworth. Last year, a health worker working with the non-profit Veterinaries Sans Frontières, or VSF, was killed in Lagos State's Chebet County. A total of 128 humanitarian workers, mostly South Sudanese, have lost their lives while providing humanitarian assistance to people since the conflict broke out in 2013, according to the United Nations. Healingworth says he fears the recent attacks on aid workers and the consequent suspension of aid activities will negatively impact humanitarian operations across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur, reporting in Rumbek, Lagos State.
A senior military officer with the South Sudan People's Defense Force, Lieutenant General Peter Dor Manjur Gatluak, was wounded this morning during a shootout with his bodyguard at the military headquarters in Bilfam. A source close to the Ministry of Defense, who is not authorized to speak to the media, confirmed the shooting and said General Gatluak is receiving treatment from gunshot wounds at the military hospital in Juba. South Sudan in Focus will continue to update you on this story. The governor of Unity and Jonglei states are calling on internal displaced persons sheltering at the UN Protection of Civilians in Juba to return to their homes. The two governors visited the IDPs who fled their homes when fighting broke out in Juba in December 2013. Some of the IDPs say they find it difficult to return to their homes because their houses have been occupied by armed men. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Thousands of internally displaced persons living in what used to be known as the UN-run protection of civilian sites were singing songs about peace yesterday as they welcomed Unity State Governor Joseph Nguyen Montil, Jonglei State Governor Dine Jok Chagor, and Central Equatorial State Deputy Governor Sarah Nene. Jonglei State Governor Chagor told the IDPs the country is at peace and therefore it is the right time to leave the IDP camp and return home.
I know that you are suffering in the POC, but the suffering is not for you alone. The suffering is for all South Sudanese, even those who are outside the POC. For how long are you going to stay in these camps? Peace is not about especially the army or soldiers to look after you. Peace is about going out and doing your own thing. Build your house, cultivate, look after your cattle, and send your children to school. That is peace.
Tab Lual, a resident and a community leader at the camp, says some IDPs are reluctant to leave the camp and make their way back to their homes because their houses have been occupied by people holding guns.
Before I came here, I had a house I have been in since 2011, and I came here with nothing. When I tried to return there, I found some people with guns staying there, and I found it difficult to make them leave my house. I don't want violence because of this small peace, and if I do that, it may escalate into more problems in the country.
Central Equatorial State Deputy Governor Sarah Nene advised IDPs to report to police anyone who is occupying their houses.
We encourage the resettlement, the people return back, but those who are their houses has been occupied, please report to the police so that we will stand with you. We are in solidarity with you. You are in our heart. You are our people.
Nene challenged Unity State Governor Montwil and Jonglei State Governor Chagor to begin the process of returning IDPs in their states in order to show people in Juba that the government is working. Gita Pais, the UNMISS head of field office in Central Equatorial State, reminded the IDPs who are largely dependent on UN food assistance that the UN will not continue to provide food aid. She is encouraging the IDPs to leave the camps so they can start a new life at home.
You may know that the whole world is going on COVID-19. The donors supporting the South Sudan is reduced its contributions. It is also going to be reduced in the coming years. As I would like to request all the community members, you may have to think about that it is to return and reintegrate with the society, maybe to return to your places of origin.
Up until recently, nearly 190,000 internally displaced persons were under the protection of the United Nations mission in South Sudan since the outbreak of war in 2013. Only a fraction of the hundreds of thousands IDPs in South Sudan have returned home. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where the newly appointed governor for Sudan's Darfur region has vowed to end tribal conflicts among ethnic groups in the region. Mini Arkominawi says he will work with traditional leaders in Darfur to restore social cohesion, build peace, and reconcile communities in the area. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking shortly after taking the oath of office in Khartoum yesterday, Governor Mini Arkominawi, the former leader of the Darfuri-based Sudan Liberation Movement, said he will work with the traditional leaders of the various Darfuri communities to end tribal conflicts, restore peace, and reconcile the communities. Minawi is a member of the Sudan Revolutionary Front, or SRF, an umbrella group of several rebel groups that signed the Juba peace deal with the transitional government in October 2020. He was named the general governor of Darfur region last May in accordance with the provisions of the Juba peace agreement. Minawi noted that over the past several months in Darfur, thousands of civilians were displaced from their homes while others were killed during intercommunal clashes. He says it is time for displaced persons to return to their villages and engage in farming and other activities aimed at developing the region.
We will strive to work with traditional leaders, the national government, the Darfur tribal leaders, governors, and all our relatives, wherever they might be, to stop the bloodshed in Darfur and more particularly to stop the continuous tribal clashes that keep on occurring every now and then.
Minawi reiterated his commitment to fully implement the Juba peace deal and called on other holdout groups, including the Sudan Liberation Movement faction led by Abdul Wahid Muhammad Nur, to join the peace process. He says the Darfur region will only develop if its leaders and people work together to restore the peace among different communities.
It's our responsibility to be together with the signatories to the Juba peace deal and with all Darfuri sons and daughters to fully implement the peace agreement. We will also continue to engage those who did not sign the agreement yet and make sure that they become part of every single peaceful process in Sudan.
The regional governor appealed to Sudan's international partners to support development of the region and initiate programs that will encourage IDPs and refugees to return to their homes.
We are going to work for the permanent development of the region. As Sudan is opening up a new era with the world, we will work together with our partners in the international community and international companies to rebuild Darfur and implement developmental projects.
Abdullah Osama, who resides in Al-Fashir town of northern Darfur state, welcomes the appointment of Minawi as a regional governor. Osama says the nearly 20-year conflict in Darfur has destroyed infrastructure in the region. He called on Minawi and his government to rebuild Darfur.
There has been a huge displacement among local communities. Houses were burned down and there was a clear incapability from leaders to protect civilians in Darfur. Even the state governors were not able to give that protection.
Under the Juba peace deal, Sudan will be governed through a federal system. The country is to be divided into 8 regions, including Darfur. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how is India struggling with COVID-19 cases in remote parts of the country? Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life?
My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related, I just never give up.
Golden rule. No, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie, I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying, in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. India has taken its vaccination drive to remote villages and nomadic tribes in the Himalayan region of Jammu and Kashmir territory to vaccinate its citizens for COVID-19. Reuters Emma McCarthy reports.
Less than 5% of 950 million adult Indians have received the mandatory two vaccine doses. The landscape is a world away from the megacities which reopened for business on Monday, with long queues for buses in the financial hub of Mumbai, while traffic returned to the roads of New Delhi after the devastating second wave. Infections have now hit a two-month low, allowing authorities to reopen parts of the economy.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Still on COVID issues, negotiating solutions to the global work crisis triggered by COVID-19 pandemic will be at the center of discussions at the International Labour Conference. Over the next 2 weeks, some 4,700 delegates from 176 countries have registered to attend the conference held virtually for the first time because of the pandemic. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
During his opening remarks, Director General of the International Labour Organization, Guy Ryder, told his largely invisible audience that global action was required to overcome what he called the cataclysmic impact of COVID-19 on the world of work. He said this work crisis was four times as severe as the one triggered by the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009. He said 255 million full-time jobs had been lost last year because of the pandemic, wiping out $3.7 trillion of labor income.
108 million people pushed back into working poverty, and the most vulnerable and already disadvantaged hit hardest. Young people, women, informal workers, migrants. The pandemic has confronted us with unbearable brutality, with the reality and consequences of the multiple and growing inequalities in our societies.
Ryder notes the pandemic has worsened the inequalities that already existed. He said they have hardened into deep structural injustice, widening the fairness gap between the rich and poor countries. He said all societies have suffered unbearable loss in health and wealth. But he said recovery from the pandemic was now underway in wealthy countries that have access to life-saving vaccines. These countries, he added, can look forward to getting back quite rapidly to pre-pandemic levels of GDP.
But for low-income countries and most of the developing world, the prospects are starkly different. The fact is that gross inequities in vaccine distribution and vastly different fiscal firepower would inject a double dose of more inequality into the world of work, with a booster from uneven digital connectivity. That is, unless deliberate action is taken to prevent it.
ILO Chief Ryder noted this terrible global crisis required a global response. He said only effective international cooperation and action can close the growing divide between the have and have-not countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Since the brutal civil war in Ethiopia's Tigray region began in November, many healthcare centers in the area have been looted and destroyed. Parents often have to travel for weeks to get care for children injured in the battles. VOA's Heather Maddock has more from Makele and Edgar Musu in Ethiopia.
A lot of the anger is directed at the Ethiopian government forces and specifically the Eritrean forces. But one of the points of contention with the Ethiopian government forces, or at least the Ethiopian government, is that it allows Eritrean forces to be in their country. They see the Eritrean forces as threatening, and there's lots of stories of abuses. And while the stories about the Ethiopian government forces, there's also terrible stories about them, and as well as every other group involved in this battle. But on the ground, what we hear every day is anger directed towards the Eritrean forces and blaming the Ethiopian forces for allowing them to be there.
What's the humanitarian situation in the places that you're visiting? The United Nations estimated that some 90% of the people in Tigray are in dire need of food. When we were speaking earlier and you were in the capital city of Mekele, you know, you visited internally displaced persons camp and people there hadn't eaten until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. What's it like out in the more remote areas?
There's food insecurity everywhere, and there's hunger everywhere. And in the more remote areas, people say that they do need food aid, and there's simply none available. The worst hit areas that the United Nations is concerned about famine coming are largely cut off for reporters and, sadly, humanitarian workers that can't get aid to them if they have it available. Another humanitarian crisis that's going on is in health, and it's quite dramatic, where healthcare centers, small clinics across the region have been closed and many have been looted. In fact, most have been looted, if I can say, and they don't have any medicine and they don't have any equipment. And so I was in the hospital the other day, and we were meeting children without limbs and with gunshot wounds and hit by shrapnel and terrible direct injuries from war. And many of them had spent weeks between the time they got injured to the time they got treated because their parents were taking them from town to town trying to find help. But all the clinics had no supplies and no medicine. So like a baby whose leg was slashed with a knife and had a gunshot wound, sorry, she's 4 years old, a gunshot wound in her hand. It took her father weeks to bring her to the actual hospital, and they thought she was dead by the time she got there because the only thing anyone had done in that time was just wash her with water. And these children that I'm talking about are the survivors. So one has to think, and most parents that I spoke to that have experienced horrible things in terms of their health of their children from injuries based on the lack of health care almost anywhere but the main cities, is that they express gratitude that their children live.
That's VOA Middle East correspondent and Istanbul bureau chief Heather Murdoch speaking to International Edition's Steve Miller. The Supreme Court in the United States says thousands of immigrants living in the U.S. for humanitarian reasons cannot apply to become permanent residents. AFP Washington correspondent Shaga Megani reports.
A unanimous high court says federal immigration law bans people who enter the country illegally and now have what's called temporary protected status from seeking green cards. The case hinged on whether those people were actually admitted to the U.S. under immigration law. Justice Elena Kagan says they were not, writing for the court in a case that pitted the Biden administration against immigrant groups who argued many of the people in question have lived in the U.S. for years and put down roots. The House has passed a bill making it possible for TPS recipients to become permanent residents, but the Senate prospects are unclear. Sagar Magani, Washington.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you today. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1-202-630-8011. We now leave you with the song Africa Yako by Alpha Blondy.
Samori Touresaya. Manina oko Lumumba saya Manina oko Kwame Nkrumah saya Neseka nina oko Africa Africa yako Africa Africa yako, Africa, Africa yako.
Farafina chigibe fengelele kong, anjigibe masabale kong.
Africa, Africa yako, Africa, Africa yako, Africa. Africa yako
Farafina chigibe fengelele kong Anjigibe masabale kong
Mana mana kumani tabonela Atabonela asimoneka Mana mana kumani tabonela Atabonela akumboneka Bodo nyami kem fache fache lango otekene la Ika maro bari yami kem bamso bamso lango faratine la te
Farafina chigibe fengelele
We've been listening to Alpha Blondy with the song Africa Yako. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.